Welcome to Business Game Changers, where you'll hear expert tips on the big issues and the hottest trends to level up your business game. If you're building a career or building a business, this is Must Hear Radio. Here's your host, Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. Okay, before we get into the show today, I have to make a shout out to my son and congratulate him for getting into Northwestern University's School of Engineering. He is a senior in high school and he just applied and it's his first choice and he got in and I couldn't be prouder of him. He's just bouncing off the walls with excitement and I just needed to make a shout out to the world that I am proud of him. Okay. So now we're going to get into renewable energies, the show. We are going to be talking to Marty Mulrood, and he is the owner and founder of True North Solar. And we're going to be talking about different renewable energy, what the trends are. We're going to talk about solar, how that can benefit the environment, how you can save money financially, what's going on politically with that, what other renewable energies there are, what are the shape of our grids in this country, what's coming down the pike as far as the energy grids and how the energy companies are going to take care of things. There's just a lot of different topics that we're going to be talking about with renewable energy. But before we get into that, I bring on Cameron Neer and John Cassens from DSMB. They're both CPAs, and they're going to be talking to us about how you can close out 2014 and start 2015 with reducing, well, with fewer problems and hopefully with some tax savings. They also give us just different ideas on how to plan ahead, think about what's going on, you know, throughout the year. They have a lot of really good tips. Hi, Cameron and John. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hello.
Okay, let's just dive right in. Briefly tell us a bit about DSMB and what you do.
I'll start. DSMB is a full-service accounting firm here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul. We do audit, assurance, tax, business valuations, and a whole number of platforms from manufacturing, construction, healthcare, franchisees, retail, across the board. We service a number of different clients around our area and in states around Minnesota. My name's John Cassens, and I work in our small business department. I work with business owners from the mom-and-pop shops on Main Street, as well as multi-location franchise owners. So we deal from very small to actually quite large companies as well. Cam?
And I'm Cameron Meyer. I work in the tax department at DSMB. My primary focus is business returns, but I started out doing individuals, so I do touch those as well.
I was going to say, so you have a pretty broad knowledge of both.
Right. Yep. When I first started here 6 years ago, I started out doing primarily individuals and then kind of gradually worked into the other side.
Well, you know, as you know, everybody is really interested in taxes. As much as they don't like them, we're all interested in them. What would you say are some of the most important things that people need to do yet for 2014?
I would say on the individual side, contributing to HSAs, contributing to your retirement plans, making any contributions, charitable donations by the end of the year, you know, that'll help get your tax, you know, down. But those would be the three main things within the next couple of weeks that I would focus on individuals.
What happens if they – go ahead, John.
And for business owners, we just got some legislation passed by the Senate last night. It should go to the president today to be signed, but that's going to be our tax extenders. That's going to affect the businesses quite a bit from the asset additions. So the big ticket item in there would be your depreciation. So we get a lot of Section 179 as well as bonus depreciation up to $500,000 of write-off of a fixed assets, which was going to go down to $25,000 if they didn't pass that. So it's quite a big jump. Granted, a lot of the businesses that want to take advantage of that within the next week and a half may have some trouble getting those assets into place.
Well, so that's my question is what happens if you don't get that and you do it like the first week of January?
So the assets should have been in service by 12/31 of this year.
Okay.
So we may have some difficulty of, you know, getting that onto the 14 books. And that's the whole problem with the whole lame duck and the tax extenders being signed in so late. It really hurts the business owners.
Well, I mean, they pass it last night, and you better get it done in the next week and a half, and there's Christmas
right.
And all these other things in here.
And it always helps as business owners to consult with your tax advisors because we're kind of cued in, and we keep reading the press clippings and everything to kind of see where it's planning to shake out. So even though it just got signed into law today, we've been under the impression that there was a great possibility that it would be
sure.
extended as well. So we may have some, and for those forward-thinking business owners that still went and did some CapEx stuff and purchased some of those items throughout the year, they're getting, you know, the benefit of that being extended through the end of this year. So.
Yeah, and you tell them, you say, hey, this is probably going to happen. Be ready for this.
Right.
And you want to take advantage of that.
Correct.
And the question still stands, what happens on your personal taxes, let's say your HSA, if you don't transfer it by the 31st, you pretty much lose that. Is that accurate?
No. The HSA contribution is due by April 15th. So you could still contribute up to that date for your 2014 tax return.
Are there other items as well that are like that?
Some of the retirement stuff is, it kind of depends on how your plan is set up. So it kind of depends, but there are some of them that you can contribute into up until April 15th.
Okay. Are there any items like that from a business perspective?
From a business perspective, it's a little bit more difficult to, the profit sharing, would be one that you'll be able to get in place, when you're working with your TPAs. That doesn't have to be set in stone for those dollar figures, at least from, as of 12/31, you have some leeway on that, as well as if you're going to have bonuses. So let's say you're going to give your employees bonuses, and you can actually book that, and you don't have to pay it out until March 15th if you're an S-Corp and you're due on March 15th. LLC's April 15th as well. So there are miscellaneous items out there. There, obviously, it's always a good idea to get those things in place by 12/31, but there are options out there.
Well, if you're scrambling, you want to be able to know, okay, can I set this aside a little bit and I got to scramble to get these things done. And, you know, at this point, it's nice to be able to know what things you can at least have a little bit of breathing room on.
Right. Well, a lot of it, too, is cash flow, you know.
Exactly.
Especially at the end of the year when you're trying to do all this, knowing when those due dates are for when you have to pay it. So that way it can help with that cash flow standpoint as well.
Well, what is the most important things that people should be looking at for 2015?
Cam, you want to take the individual side?
I mean, really for the individual stuff, it's going to be kind of the three I already touched on. I noticed a lot is that retirement plans. People should really be maximizing their contributions to those. You know, it helps reduce your tax liability as well as it's benefiting you in the future, too. So that's a big one when we're doing tax planning with our individual clients is doing that. You know, some clients who own a lot of, you know, businesses and stuff, you know, gifting if they're getting to kind of the, you know, trust planning type stage to kind of be looking ahead at, you know, the next 5 years, what you're going to be doing with that as well. So not a whole lot is changing in 2015 versus 14. The HSA contribution amount went up $100, so the maximum for 2015 is $6,650. Another thing that is changing in 2015 is the standard mileage rate. You know, for your business miles traveled,
yep.
Is going up to 57.5 cents a mile, up from 56 for 2014.
Okay.
So those are a couple of the, you know, changes that they have out now.
How about from a business standpoint?
From the business side, it's a little bit more tricky because we only got these tax extenders and some of the benefits through 2014. So we don't know necessarily where legislation is going to shake out over the next 12 months. They could possibly do the same thing this next year. So it always makes planning a little bit trickier for the businesses to see, okay, should I spend this money when I'm going to get the benefit of a deduction via depreciation or what it may be. So the business side, it is a little bit harder to plan on where you're trying to take your business. What can I do? Because we just don't know if those laws are going to be in place by the end of the year. They have been throwing out the idea over the past couple years now of the tax reform for businesses. And that was going to be a big lapse on the tax extenders was, you know, all these other cuts that were going to happen to the businesses from a deduction standpoint, mainly the depreciation, as we already talked about. But there are also other opportunities out there that would have lapsed as well, like the working opportunity tax credit that business owners get to take on their employees, but it affects them personally. So there are other things out there from a planning standpoint. It is really difficult for the businesses to say, hey, this is what I should do, especially in the early stages right now when you're looking forward to 2015.
So at this point, the deductions that are in place, we're thinking they're just going to extend them, but we're not sure. Is that what I'm hearing?
Right. It's tough for us to say, hey, we're most likely going to see the accelerated depreciation go forward for 2015, because we don't know if they are going to come through and have a major tax reform over the next year or what's going to happen.
And
the kind of status quo of the last 2 years has been, well, we're just going to extend them for one more year, which that doesn't help anybody from a planning standpoint, especially the business owners.
But is the chatter that we're going to extend them, or is it starting to be like we don't really know what they're going to do?
Well, the chatter is we don't really know right now because they just got done extending for last year, for this year.
Oh,
yeah. So we don't know.
It's hard. If they don't do 2014 early and they wait until the very end, that tells you politically that it probably wasn't as popular as you thought, maybe, you know, as it really needs to be to get go through legislation quickly.
Right, as well as all the other items that they're dealing with. The tax extenders usually get pushed back a little bit when they do have other social and political issues that come up that take priority.
Oh, that makes sense. Okay, so in closing, is there anything else that you would want people to know and they should, what should they do to get their act together?
I would really say, you know, you should consult with your tax advisors as much as possible. You know, we're here to benefit our clients, to, you know, answer questions throughout the year to help with that planning. So come December, you're not having so many surprises.
So you're not scrambling?
Yep, correct.
Yeah, we never like to have surprises come April 15th for our clients. And really the biggest thing that I always tell our clients is don't be afraid to pick up the phone. You know, we're here. We'll pick up the phone morning, day, night. It doesn't really matter. We're here, and no question is a stupid question. It may be the smallest item to you, but you might as well ask it if you've got it out there. Because we're here to serve you guys.
Well, how can people get hold of you? What is your phone number and what is your website? So people who need questions, who need advice, looking for your types of services, how can they get hold of you?
Our website is dsb-cpa.com. And you can reach myself at 612-630-5071.
And I can be reached at 612-630-5079.
Okay, well, great. And if you could send me that information, I'd love to get that on my radio page as well, so people who are reading about it can see it there too.
Great.
Awesome.
Okay, well, thank you so much. You've helped us a lot.
Thanks, Sarah.
Have a great holiday.
Yeah, you too.
Thanks. Well, hopefully you'll heed some of their advice and prepare and look into what the legislation is and look for ways to reduce problems, and to save money. Remember, if you have any questions, make sure to give them a call. They are always there to help people, and they really do have a good outfit going on there. Okay, now we're going to introduce Marnie Morud to the program and talk about renewable energy. Hi, Marnie. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Glad that you're here. I want to talk to you about your renewable energy projects that you have going on. But before we get into this, can you briefly explain what your background is?
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Marty Morud. I own and operate True North Solar, a local solar energy construction company in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area of Minnesota, working statewide and regionally as well. Grew up on a farm in North Dakota and in Minnesota. Actually moved across several different cities growing up. My dad was a school administrator and my mom was a nurse. Both lifelong career choices that I think is a strong influence on myself and my two brothers. So most of my childhood was farm life.
You're a hard worker.
At St. John's. Well, you know, you have to be creative. The time was spent outdoors, being your own little scientist, and coming up with contraptions. It wasn't a snowball fight. It was, using whatever kind of homing slingshots and catapults you could to have the snowball
fight. Oh, that's funny. You know? Yeah.
So
we always used the straws and we would do spit wad fights with my dad.
Yeah.
Running around the cars. We weren't on a farm though.
Yeah.
But keep going.
Absolutely. It was a fun time, in the Morud household, and, plenty of wrestling and that still continues now, that I'm in my 30s and I have an older and a younger brother. Both of us have, very, different personalities at times and then very similar personalities at times. It's been a great time, for our family. So. Went to college at St. John's University, got a degree in biochemistry there, and really was planning to be a doctor. Had a couple internships at the University of Minnesota in their genetics group, and learned that research was going to be a true passion of mine, and then landed a dream job at Medtronic. And right out of college, kind of the bottomless budgets of corporate research with a strong foundation from Earl Bakken, and his mission, how he grew Medtronic out of his garage in North Minneapolis back in 1956, was kind of a second major influence on who I am today.
It is kind of I was in an environment like that once, where you have an endless supply of resources to kind of tinker and do what you want. And oh my God, you're not really in a realistic environment, and it is fun. But keep going.
It's a blast. I worked on several different research teams with success and failures all around, and really saw how, 40,000 people could drill it down to day-to-day activities and get things done. It was definitely a golden period of my life for a couple of years, and then the recession started to hit. And I think anytime you see a major shift in, finances, whether it be the federal level or your college budget for the weekends, things are going to happen. Emotions change, rules change, organizational structure changes, and layoffs were looming. And that significantly impacted what I was going to do next and how I was going to approach the next segment of my life.
So then you got into solar energy and renewable energy. What motivated you to get into this field?
Well, I grew up a farm kid and was outside. I spent the vast majority of my life outside, working and playing too. And, still at Medtronic, I was doing research. I was passionately working towards hearing something for someone somehow. But he was still on the wrong side of the glass window. I think folks at Medtronic would say that I always went to the window, looked over the pond, and watched the ducks fly in. And I think there was some inspiration there going, what in the heck am I doing on the wrong side of the glass? And changes were coming too, right? I had to start thinking of a plan B. It was an internal fight. I wanted to be indispensable, but at the other, you know, at the same time, I knew that it probably isn't going to last forever.
So did you have the entrepreneurial bug, or you wanted to be outdoors type person?
Well, I wanted to be outdoors, and yeah, the frustrations, you know, came out in some conversations I had with my father, who was on the governor's workforce committee at the time, for the state of Minnesota. And when the recession hit, the federal government had to have the response. The state government had to have the response. Each county and each city had to have their own response. And largely back in 2008 in Minnesota, the legislature passed some laws that said green jobs were going to be the wave of the future. This is back in 2008. And my dad was, you know, playing a leading role in the implementation of those green jobs policies. And he saw it as a way to kind of lure me back to the farm field. And
it sounds like he was
took
right.
A couple of years.
Yeah.
He was
done.
Absolutely right. He was absolutely right.
So your passion came from growing up on the farm, wanting to be outside, knowing that renewable energy was the future, and you saw a niche and you moved.
It was a chance to, you know, be farm kids in the farm field, you know, flipping a switch on solar, making a difference. You know, I wanted to be a doctor and a researcher because I wanted to make a, you know, society difference, you know, for people. And the energy industry allowed me to continue down that path, but do it outside and choose a career path that I think has some longevity to it. You know, the energy industry with the oil and the renewables kind of, you know, both, you know, gaining speed here is something that should be around for many, many years to come.
Yeah. Well, you know why I have you on is that you're a very humble guy, which is really nice. I like talking to humble people, but the reason why I really wanted you to have you on is I heard from a number of people that you're really a leader in this industry. And I have a feeling you're not going to blow your own horn on that one, but that is it's pretty neat to be called a leader in the industry. And there's a reason why that people are saying that. And I want you to talk a little bit. We're going to zoom way out and we're going to talk about some of the trends that are going on, in renewable energy. I know that China, Africa, and other countries are really getting off the grid a lot more. It's a lot more competitive environment with them getting off the grid. A lot of the new construction in China, especially the new homes and in Africa, they just start from the beginning completely off the grid. And so us long-term to be able to compete internationally with these other countries just getting off the grid, How do you see us as a country competing, and what are the national trends going on with renewable energy?
So with renewable energy in general, the trend, you know, is a little bit away from wind and towards solar on, you know, the generation side, what is going to generate the energy that facilitates our lives going forward? How are we going to change that future recipe? There's a big chunk of it, started changing with wind in the early 2000s, and now there's many wind development companies that are shifting over to solar, because the cost of the solar materials that are being installed came down so much. Solar is now seen as a more competitive, you know, fuel choice or resource for that energy mix.
In the 80s and 90s, it just wasn't even, it really wasn't a financially good source of energy. But now it's just changed, right?
Yeah, the cost of the silica wafer has come down a ton. You know, it used to be in the neighborhood of $78 a watt. Now we're hitting numbers in the 60, 70, and 80 cents per watt.
Oh, that's huge. Okay.
And
I get it.
It's interesting to me that folks that knew they were so expensive 30 and 40 years ago are the ones making the choices now to go to solar.
Well, I had an accountant the other day tell me that he's not a big fan of solar because in the 80s his parents did this big solar project and it was just a big flop and it was a waste and their solar panels were all screwed up and they never got the energy out of it. And he's an example, or that project is an example of how different it is today. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's seen as a viable, reliable source of energy because the sunlight is so, good in that 2 to 7 p.m. time frame when our utilities sense their peak power output to facilitate our demand. It's a very competitive source.
So I have a question about the environmental impact of creating the solar panels. You know how people complain that creating the car batteries is worse than the savings you're getting with the electric cars? Now, I don't know if that's true, but I've heard that quite a bit. Now, is that the case with solar panels, where the creation creates so much energy pollution just creating the panels that the long-term benefits aren't, it doesn't matter?
It's a concern that everybody should have, but it's a concern that, you know, we should all have it. That we look at the entire picture, that we look at all the numbers, and when you run, you know, productions and carbon savings over 25, 30, or 40 years when these panels are out working, the benefits far outweigh the initial production, carbon intensity that it takes to put them together. We shouldn't be just so concerned with this on panels, but everything that we manufacture. Manufacturing takes a ton of energy throughout our nation. And what can we do to reduce that energy and green it up a bit, make it more efficient, and then top it off some renewables? We should be looking at the big picture and things. And I've seen the car battery article. I've seen articles on solar panels, but none of them really encompass the full, long-term benefit that these materials can provide.
Well, I gotta say, my big reason why I like solar is the financial reason, and I think businesses in general, when they create so much, they need so much energy. If you can get a renewable energy that creates a return that gives you a return on your investment where you're not paying for your energy after a certain point, to me, that's a big deal. And I know a lot of people are into the whole green thing, but being green is a good financial investment if done right. And that's, before it wasn't a good financial investment. Now it seems to be. I teach a class at the University of Minnesota, and I built and ran a company in my past and things. And so when you run a company and you're managing P&L and you're doing those things, it's really hard to not just be very financially focused. And what I'm learning through the solar project that I'm doing and just talking to you and to others is that financially it's good now. I mean, you're going to get your money back and more. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. The cost of solar installations come down a ton through the material costs coming down, as well as efficiencies in installation. We have a couple of folks on our team that are, Six Sigma, Lean Sigma focused construction managers that look at our installation to see how fast can we do that in a quality and a safe way and still provide a good experience to our customers. It's all of the costs associated with installing that brings it down. Now, when you bring that cost down, you shave off that, you benefit from that return immediately, because what used to be a $30,000, upfront cost is now a $5,000 upfront cost, or a $20,000 or $25,000 upfront cost. So that's the first thing, getting down that cost of installation down, making it a more competitive resource with where folks are currently buying their electricity. The second thing is electrical rates in general. Now, it'll cost the same to install a 20-panel system in Minnesota as it does in California. Let's say that's $20,000 in California to install that system and $20,000 to install it in Minnesota. But the difference is that, and it's kicking out about the same amount of energy. The sun intensity isn't that much different between the two states. But what is different is the energy savings. For every kilowatt hour that system produces in California, the homeowner or business owner, you know, saves 15 or 16 or 18 cents. But for every kilowatt hour produced in Minnesota, that home or business saves 10, 11, or 12 cents. That's what dramatically changes the financials. And because both the cost of installation have come down so much, and the cost of the other resource, the oil, the gas, the wind, the hydro, the nuclear, since those costs have gone up so much, solar has become a competitive resource because it's come down in price.
Well, and what I understand is the energy grid is becoming old and antiquated in a lot of states, and that, you know, there's been a buzz around the internet and different media outlets that our energy grid is in trouble, and that the demand for energy has increased to the point where we just can't keep up with it from a supply standpoint, and that's why the cost of energy has gone up so much. And correct me if I'm wrong here, but for the states that have lower energy costs now, that's not going to last long term, because it's going to be rerouted to the areas where they're getting more money for their energy. Is that accurate? Or will the governments intervene and not let that happen?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'd say probably 30 or 40% of the cost of electricity comes from the actual generation facility and fuel choice that the utility uses to produce that electricity. Here in Minnesota, we're 53% coal-fired, and we don't have our own coal. It's all imported from other states or other nations. And so, and all of those facilities have a certain, you know, lifespan. And all, you know, most of them are 40, 50, and 60 years old. They're looking at retirement. One, they're old and they take a ton of maintenance and they're dirty. And all of those things outweigh the benefits of coal being cheaper. Also, their book life is over. From the utility's perspective, when they create these generation facilities, they have a certain depreciation in book life. And because these facilities have been around 40, 50, 60 years, they have no tax or financial benefit to the utility's books. So they're interested in getting away from them as well, from that standpoint. So it's time to start thinking about the next resource of the next 5, 10, 20, 30, and 50 years from now. Do we build another coal plant to have the same problems, you know, that we have now for the next 50 or 60 years? Or do we choose a cleaner resource? And that's where I think the change in the energy recipe is really coming from. You know, folks don't see the coal plant and its book numbers and its maintenance costs. But they are seeing it through their rates. And as those rates go up, solar and renewables become more and more viable financially.
So what are the energy companies doing? What are you seeing as the trends?
Well, in the solar industry specifically, being nimble is huge. There's three main sectors of the solar industry. There's residential installation and kind of small commercial wraps into that. Maybe those are systems under, you know, 40 kW or 100 kW, something like that. You know, a few hundred panels. There's a commercial and industrial space, which is your large rooftops, you know, your Walmart or your Target, you know, those kinds of large flat roof commercial buildings make up that commercial and industrial space. Maybe up to a megawatt or 5 megawatts. We're talking about thousands of panels. And then you have the utility space. These are systems that the utility usually puts out for proposal that local national companies bid on to install them, procure them, engineer them, maintain them. to be a successful solar company, you really have to be nimble and flexible, because there's different incentives at different times to hit each of those different markets. The residential is largely the bread and butter of our business and the bread and butter of most folks' business, solar businesses. But the utility, you know, through policy and you know, regulatory environments change what they're going after. Right now in Minnesota, they're hitting residential hard with incentives and rebates. Commercial industrial space really doesn't have any benefit to it, and so you don't see a lot of flat roof systems going up. And then the utility has, you know, hundreds of megawatts out for bid to put ground mount systems on that make a significant change future energy recipes. So to be able to play in all of those markets and add on some energy efficiency, you know, services to your business when there are no rebates at all, or the legislature's locked up and nothing's moving forward, is really, you know, to create that well-rounded renewable energy company. So that's what it looks like in the business world.
So they're trying to go after wind, they're going after solar, they're staying with coal, they're hedging their bets, essentially.
Well, utilities want to, you know, supply reliable power, safe power, they're used to the fuel source that they've been choosing for 110 years. And it's a slow-moving process, but many of them are coming around. Partnerships and collaborations with local utilities is absolutely imperative to what we do.
Well,
we are interconnecting, you know, systems to the grid and their grid and our people's grid.
Are they starting to appreciate? Are they starting to appreciate the energy they're getting back that they can resell, or not because they have to buy it at a high price?
There's federal interconnection laws that, you know, say that you must be able to interconnect to the grid, but the federal government leaves it largely up to the state government and local utilities to determine what the value of that energy is. So in Minnesota, we have a net metering law. In other states, they have, you know, other net metering laws. But they're all a little bit different. You know, what is the value? When is it trued up? What happens with, you know, if you turn your meter back more than it turns forward, that you supply the grid with more energy than the grid supplies you? So it's really a state-by-state and utility-by-utility value proposition for solar on the grid.
We're in a state where they have to pay you retail prices for it. I wouldn't think the energy companies would like that too much. But yet they're supplying incentives for people to do that. So why if they have to pay retail prices to get it back, why would they do energy incentives? Where is that coming from?
You know, there's a debate on what the value of the kilowatt hour is. You know, the kilowatt hour is like the, you know, electrical gallon of gas. How many gallons of electricity are you going to buy to service your house or business? So that's what actually hits your bills, of the kilowatt hour. The kilowatt hour is valued differently by the utility sometimes than it is by the homeowner. The homeowner says that they're purchasing a kilowatt hour at the meter, and that's where we're going to count its value. Whereas the utility, you know, will sometimes say the kilowatt hour is actually calculated, you know, back here, where we generate it. And it's a little bit of a trick on numbers, because a lot of times these large coal plants and generation facilities are kicking out two or three times as many kilowatt hours, you know, just to get 30% of them to show up at the meter on site because of transmission losses and distribution losses.
So it's not their true cost. It's still below their cost significantly. So it makes sense, but that doesn't make sense.
Well, it to answer your question, what is the true cost of the solar derived kilowatt hour? And you would have a system, you know, on a roof or on a business. one, the utility did not pay to build it. They didn't pay for the materials. They didn't pay for the distribution lines or the transmission lines or the fuel costs. They didn't pay for all that oil, natural gas, coal, nuclear waste management. They didn't pay for any of those things. So really the renewables industry is looking at all of those avoided costs. When we plug in a panel to the grid, it's clean, reliable power for many years to come. And it avoided a ton of costs, administratively, maintenance-wise, fuel choice, transmission, distribution, substation. You know, a lot of those things aren't as necessary when solar is on the grid. And this is clearly an oversimplification of things because our grid is very, very complicated.
So even if
it needs
paying,
to be flexible.
Can I summarize this up? And I'm trying to figure out how paying retail could ever be good for somebody. But if they're paying retail, then that's for something on the grid, then that's decreasing their cost and increasing their profit margin on other areas to make it worth their while. Is that what I'm hearing?
I think that the solar asset owner, whether it be a homeowner or a business, wants to be compensated fairly for the avoided cost that their solar kilowatt hour generated, you know, eliminates. On the other hand, the utility wants clean, reliable, cost-effective power delivered to all of its customers. And that's where I think, you know, we're stuck there. You know, we need to have more partnerships and collaborations with the utility.
It can't be a good deal for them. It's not a good deal. It's a good deal for the homeowner, but it's a step towards helping to get things figured out. I don't mean to cut you off, but I don't understand why they give incentives and how are they getting money from the federal government by giving incentives? What are they? Are they getting a huge deduction on their tax bill? What's happening to their bottom line where it makes sense to do an incentive?
Largely, they do it because they're told to do it by the local public utilities commission, who's serving the public interest and the desires of the local jurisdiction. So if all the Minnesotan folks say, we want solar, that's heard at the state and house. And that passes laws, you know, and statutes to be enforced at the Public Utilities Commission. And the Public Utilities Commission goes out to the utility and says, do this, because everybody asked for it. And I think that's probably the most...
It's
political, maybe for a lot of the right reasons, you know.
Yes.
But largely, utilities aren't moving forward on these things unless, you know, the Public Utility Commission steps in and says, you know, do this. This is the right thing to do.
Well,
now, that's the case with many large utilities, but there are also some very small co-ops and municipal utilities that are doing this on their own. Through community solar opportunities or just local rebates.
Well, utility
just opened one kind of on their own.
Well, it just,
because their members asked for it.
Well, it just points to how good of a financial opportunity it is for the consumer right now, is take advantage while the political climate is really good and get your incentives, get this stuff figured out. I think long-term solar seems the trend that's really going to take off, but financially it's going to be a good deal just because it's a good deal. Now it's financially a good deal because it's a good deal and you're getting all these incentives.
Exactly. Financially, you know, finances will always control these types of decisions. Our hope is that at least at some point they're inspired by environmental reasons, that it's really the right thing to do as well. And there's many folks out there that have 10, 15, 20-year paybacks on their systems. And finances were part of the decision. They had the finances, or they could find financing for it. But at the end of the day, they looked around at their kids and grandkids and their grandkids and said, I want to leave a legacy here. I'm never going to live, you know, to see the payback on this system. But at the end of the day, it's just the right thing to do. And the solar industry is relying on a number of those folks, you know, to change that future energy recipe. So
basically you'll be paying for 10 years. Let's say, for example, you'll be paying for your energy system for 10 years and paying about the same as what you would monthly for energy. And then after 10 years, your energy is free.
Correct. There are two types of solar purchasers out there. One is a cash sale investor, whether they're a homeowner, you know, or the Warren Buffetts of the world, they're investing in something. They want to see an ROI, they want to see a payback, and they want to see a profit. And that's possible with solar, given the right conditions. Here's $30,000, you go in the hole, you build it back, you come out $30,000 positive over 25 years. However, most folks investing look at that and say, there's other places to put my money. And it's a tough sale sometimes because we have to convince folks that, again, this is the right thing to do. It's not just a financial decision. The second kind of purchaser is a payment buyer. And they look at their monthly budget for electricity and say it's $100 a month. And then we run the numbers if we were to finance solar and say, would you choose solar over your existing recipe of electricity if it was $99 a month? Or, you know, vice versa, would you pay $5 more a month to have your electricity come from a clean, you know, 100% clean resource? In some states and in some, you know, utilities, it can be a $20 savings a month, and in other spaces it can be, you know, a $10 or $15 upcharge to go solar. But more and more folks are choosing solar in that fashion as a payment buyer.
Because they don't want the smokestacks blowing out crap into our environment, and for a wash or $5 a month, that makes sense.
Well, they see the financial benefit initially in a very simple, you know, in a very simple way. Right now I'm spending $100 on electricity, but I could spend $95. And look, it could come from a clean resource. That's a pretty easy sale these days.
Well, and plus, okay, so you spend $5 more a month for a period of a few years, and then the price is going to go up by $5 in about 3 years anyways, and then after your system's paid off, it's free. So it's still a good financial investment. It just means short term, you might be paying out, your cash flow monthly might be more, but you're not you're not helping them pump out crap out of the smokestacks.
Exactly. A lot of, you know, a big reason that we're doing this is because the utilities haven't done it themselves. And the utilities are starting to do it themselves, which is a good sign, I think, because they will always need our collaboration partnership for these renewable, you know, endeavors, I guess. But, you know, that's a good sign. We're taking control ourselves.
Let's face it,
clean energy on the grid that they can't.
And they're people too. They live in this environment, and financial reasons are not the only reason to do something, right? And so I tend to make most of my decisions based on financial reasons. I just got to be honest. But if I am responsible to the community and I'm cranking out waste, at some point, you say, okay, is this really what I want to do to my children's world? And do I really want to create an environment that's bad? And so they are realizing that there's other things that we can do, and we can be a part of the solution versus being the problem. And they're a big part of how to make this whole thing work.
My dad once told me, and he read it from an article, but he said, really, we're breathing the air that our, you know, grandparents and great-grandparents created for us through the industrial age and, you know, energy generation facilities that are still around today and were, you know, built so many years ago. And I look at that and go, okay, we're making decisions that are going to last several generations here. What kind of air, you know, what kind of air do I want my grandchildren and great-grandchildren breathing? It's a big deal. Little bit of the differences we're making, keep chipping and chipping away at it. And solar will never be 100% of the recipe. You know, it only shines half of the day. You know, storage might play a role, but it's not cost effective quite yet. Wind is more consistent at night. You know, there will always be these high and low peak areas. So.
What's the deal with geothermal?
You know, geothermal is interesting. It really takes, I think, equal seasons to extract heat or coolness from the ground and replace it in the off season. I don't think geothermal systems have been around quite long enough in all of the climates that could benefit from their use to really know the long lasting effects of them. So as we continue to draw heat, you know, from the ground, winter after winter after winter in Minnesota, what happens in the 10th, 11th, and 12th winter? I don't think we fully know yet.
So if all of us are drawing heat from the ground, can it mess up the ground? Is that what you're thinking?
I don't think it's on the same category as fracking could mess up the ground, but, you know, there's concern there. I would rather see more energy efficient building, passive house design, full house remodels that make our homes super, super tight and efficient with appropriate mechanical systems to manage airflow, heat, humidity, and warmth, than to, you know, dig into the ground and use a different resource for something that we can't fix above ground. I'd rather see the industry go that way. You know, and additionally, geothermal systems are very, very efficient. They are. They're 300, 350, 400% efficient. Those numbers are real. But just because they're efficient doesn't mean that they're cost effective. With the geothermal system, you're choosing your future fuel, you know, source for many, many years to come. And you want to make sure that you're choosing a fuel source that has some cost effective side to it too. Just like we educate folks to make a cost effective decision on their potential solar array.
Have you seen those solar highways where they put these panels that they're putting on these highways that are producing solar? You can produce the energy for the entire city by having these solar panels, and the lights for the lanes and everything are on these streets. And the government's doing some trial runs in some small little areas. I think that's cool. I'm really excited about some of that stuff. I think that's the future of things 100 years from, I don't know about 100 years, but, you know, why wouldn't Disney World have solar panels all over their sidewalks and their walkways, producing energy for their entire park?
Yeah, it's so cool. I mean, we got graduate students throughout the world working on these things, and it's really, really neat to see. I think in Europe someplace there's a bike path that's actually hooked up for solar, and it's just amazing what they're doing nowadays. There's still a reason that, you know, we're installing the silicon wafer that was, you know, created back in the 70s and has been around working in the field for 40 years. If we're going to promise cost-effective, reliable, safe energy for many years to come, we still have to pick a product that has proven itself in the field.
Sure.
And that's what's really hard for me right now is, folks always ask, you know, MIT has the spray paint that goes on windows, you know, the bike paths and the highways. My wife's cousin is working on some technology as a graduate student that's going to dramatically lower the costs of the solar panel, but the challenge is it's not as efficient. It doesn't produce as much power.
Oh, and, so then you need more of them.
You know, but you can do many more of them, but it will take a bigger area. and we have a limited, you know, roof space and field space and those kinds of things. We really have plenty of space now to work with the technology that we currently are installing.
But you know what I would like to see?
Huge difference.
I would like to see these solar panels start to be fashionable, like it, have it be built into the, you know, I have a modern house, so I would like a solar panel to be my roof, not this extra panels on the roof. I want it to be like this, you know, glossy, interesting surface and not this extra thing that you just attach to it. You know what I mean? It's actually integrated.
Yeah.
You're talking integrated, tight homes that are really nicely, efficiently designed. That's what I want to see. I want to see a roof segment that's just a solar panel. And so you're not producing a roof segment and a solar panel.
Well,
why can't our walls
too.
Be solar panels? And then we're not creating construction material and solar panels.
I do too. You know,
we have
a lot of manufacturing geniuses to thank for getting that cost per watt from $78 down to $60.
Well, wouldn't that be cool?
And they did it through that high throughput, you know, moving panels through the factory super fast.
But wouldn't it be cool if our siding was a bunch of, you know, you could have cool siding, you could have different things. Well, like these street things that they have with solar. You would get rid of, I was reading up on it, you would remove the cost of fixing the roads because you don't have all this crap that, in Minnesota or in cold temperatures, you know, maybe California doesn't have these issues or Texas. We have problems with cracks and cold, freeze, thaw, all this other stuff. And then plus the snow would melt too. So you wouldn't have to sit there and have road construction all year round every year, and your snow would be off the ground, and you just, if a panel breaks or something, you just replace that one panel. I don't know. I think it's cool.
It's very cool. Some of the new technology, and I'm going to probably slaughter the name, but I think it's called Gresel cells, that is a bunch of oxide-containing molecules. It's sunscreen. Think about sunscreen. You put sunscreen on your arm to absorb photons or bounce photons off and protect your skin from the sun. That's what solar panels are. It's sunscreen. It's trying to absorb those photons and harness the energy and create some electron flow.
Well, but that's why the paint works, right? That's why MIT's paint thing works.
Exactly. Super, super, super cheap. You know, to manufacture and create and get out there. But it's tough for us, you know, to sit at the kitchen table, you know, look across the table and sell something that was invented last year or the year before and then promise a, you know, 10-year payback and a 25-year warranty. And so that's the difficult side of the new things coming out. And, you know, we're waiting to hear that this technology is amazing, but it's also been in the field working for 10 or 15 years. I think that's what it'll take, to get us to shift away from silicon wafers.
Well, how do these panels hold up? Does a hurricane or snow or, you know, big light, you know, thunderstorms, wind, strong winds, what does it do to the panels?
Well, Minnesota has plenty, I mean, of wind, snow, rain. And
oh, yeah, we're about the worst climate there is.
We're also the best solar panel cleaning, you know, climate there is. So when it's a rainy day and our crews can't be installing and everybody comes back to the office and the warehouse, it's high fives. It's, you know, happy solar panel cleaning day to everybody. So the snow and the wind and the rain cleans, and that's a good thing. All solar panels are really manufactured.
Makes sense. I just missed that whole point. Basically, the wind and the rain and all this other stuff cleans our panels so they work better.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
So did
California? I don't know that it balances out with, a dry, dusty Arizona with a few more sun hours. But,
okay, I was going to say, would they have to get up there and spray it every so often just to keep it clean?
They do. You know, in the Southwest, they absolutely do clean the panels more often than we do in Minnesota. Snow is a concern that everybody has in the northern climates. A soft broom can remove snow on maybe a one-story garage or a ground mount system. We have several customers that do that. At the same time, you want to be very, very careful. You don't want to void a warranty. You don't want to nick a panel. You don't want to, break the glass or anything like that.
Is it easy to do that?
It is in the wrong way. This is tempered glass that is on almost every panel manufactured. It's as strong as your windshield. So I'll ask people, when's the last time your windshield got shattered by hail? And very rarely does it ever, actually happen. So hail and snow and wind and those kinds of things are just fine for panels. But if you drop the panel or if you nick the panel, if I took a panel here in the warehouse and I hit the corner of it with a hammer, really, really, soft, that glass would shatter real quick. So it's all about.
So don't go up there with the hammer and start beating up on your panels.
Exactly. Don't try to hack away the ice or anything.
But so realistically, you could do it by getting rid of ice or by trying to fix a shingle or something. So you have to be really careful when you're up there.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. As well as it's an energy producing system. You want experts to be, anywhere near those panels. Folks that know what they're doing, shut it off properly. Maintain it, check wires here or there, whatever might need to be done.
So I heard that you have some interesting projects going on with solar gardens. What is a solar garden?
Sure. Well, back in May of 2013, the Minnesota House and Senate passed the community solar garden legislation that allows for solar facilities to be built off-site, to be owned, operated, and maintained by a community solar garden developer or solar asset management company, and then allow people to subscribe to it. So you might, your neighborhood might not have the best solar resource because of east-west facing roofs and lots of mature trees that are very important for our climate and environment. Or you might own a condo. And not be able to put solar on your roof. You may own a business that leases its space but still pays the electricity. Or you may be a manufacturer of some sort that doesn't have a ton of square footage on your flat roof, but you consume a ton of electricity. And if you were to fill the entire roof with panels, you might only offset 5 or 10% of your electricity. And those folks want the opportunity to be more solar powered than just that 5 or 10%. So community solar projects really can fulfill the desires of many different clients, the homeowners, the condo owners, the business leasers, the corporate customers as well. So that's what it is in a nutshell. There's many different models of financing them, owning them, managing them.
If you have 10 acres of land and you have a big open field, could you set up a solar garden?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
How much open land do you need in order to be able to do a solar garden?
You can do a solar garden of really any size. And the smallest system would be, I think, 4 panels. But the largest system is probably about 4,000 to 4,500 panels in roughly an 8-acre field is the largest ones. There's some rules that were passed that allow you to common couple the gardens so that you can have a couple of them next to each other and extend the economies of scale that much more. It's economies of scale. That's the big benefit of community solar projects. You're able to do large
you know, solar facilities that make a meaningful difference in the future energy recipe, and then share that with others, with subscribers. So, you know, about 70% of homes and businesses can't do solar because of their, you know, shading or their roof or structural or whatever it might be. So these community solar projects are huge. And Minnesota did it in a big way. You know, we looked at the rest of the nation. I believe there's 17 states now that have some sort of community solar opportunity. And, you know, in Colorado, it's a limited program. You have to apply and bid on projects, and only a certain number of them get built each year.
Oh, in Minnesota, it's unlimited.
So it puts it back in the public interest. If you're a ratepayer in the XL Energy territory and you want community solar, you can get it.
So nobody basically, they allowed it to be an open market. They're not controlling
exactly.
it. I like
it,
that.
It really made Minnesota a choice state. Would you like to sign up for the existing recipe of energy our utility companies are choosing? Or would you like to choose a clean solar resource?
So can you make some good money just having if you have some land, can you make some decent money putting up a solar garden and selling it to neighbors and whoever? Or do you sell it back to the utility company? How does that work?
So panels are out in the field or up on a roof, and they're metered separately, counting the kilowatt hours that the facility produces. I call it a CSP, Community Solar Project. And as the system produces this energy, all of the energy gets tucked into the grid at a, you know, electrically engineered point of interconnection. So all of the energy is going back into the grid. And this is near a substation. This is where the grid can handle the amount of output that that solar facility is kicking out. So it's not dumping wasted kilowatt hours into the grid. It's really strategically placing that solar energy where there's a lot of load and demand. From there, the utility billing system takes over and says, okay, that community solar project produced 10,000 kilowatt hours last month. And there are 100 subscribers, and they each own, you know, 1%. So 1%, you know, or 100 kilowatt hours would each show up on their bill. So the utility takes all that production, multiplies it by the going kilowatt hour rate, the CSG bill credit rate, and subscribers see a bill credit on their bill.
Okay, so they're
buy electricity as you normally do. You just see that solar, you know, community solar bill credit at the bottom of your bill each month.
Interesting. Okay. So they can save money that way. They're an investor in the solar garden. They can save a little bit of money, and they're helping out the world. They're helping our
exactly.
world.
Exactly.
So,
and remember the payment buyers that I talked about earlier. Getting this large economies, you know, of scale solar facility up and running allows us to sell that payment buyer so much more easily. You can say, I can deliver so much solar power to your house or your business cheaper than the rates are today and at a better price, all because of the economies of scale.
Yeah, we can help the environment, and you can get it for less money.
Right.
Well, how can you say no to that? So, okay,
well,
so how...
I can't say no to that.
So that's why you dedicate your life to it, right?
Well, none of this stuff matters to us unless it's turned on and operating. Unless, you know, clean energy kilowatt hours are floating around our grid, you know, with the cleanest recipe that is still reliable, still cost effective, and still safe. That's what we're after. So when we have an opportunity like this to make a meaningful difference, we're taking it. We're putting as much community solar up as we possibly can, and then we're going to maintain it contractually through XL for 25 years. But
is it only that utility, or would you work with other utilities around the country?
We're installing community solar projects for 18 co-ops throughout Minnesota as well. And they're all structuring them a little bit differently. Those smaller utilities are going out to its members and its ratepayers to sell subscriptions, so they're managing all of that. Whereas in XL territory, it's up to the community solar developer to manage the subscriptions.
Okay.
And the asset itself.
So if somebody had land and they wanted to build one, do you help people do that?
Absolutely. We having 100 ratepayers own a solar generation facility can get pretty messy. And so our model, if that's what you want to call it, I guess, is more of a solid solar asset management model where it's all turnkey. It's provided to the ratepayers, the host site, the utility. We keep it all kind of in a turnkey solution so that folks can really sit back, you know, watch us pound posts and rack modules and turn the system on. Anytime you get many, many subscribers into a community solar project and also have them as owners, it gets extremely complicated. And we've looked at this, especially with the tax credit, to reduce in 2 years. We want to do as much of this as we can. So we've tried to keep it as turnkey as possible. So, I don't want to give the impression that that we help folks create these systems. Really, folks sign up and they allow us to do what we're so good at, which is get out there and develop and build and turn on and maintain a solar asset for them.
So you pretty much build the system, but they just come to you and say, I have land. And then do they...
Folks come to us, yeah, and say, I have land, or they say, I want to be a subscriber. Those are the two questions, that we get asked is, I have land, can you build? And we say yes or no, and folks say, I pay electric bills, can I subscribe? And we say yes or no.
I pay electric bills.
There's more
bills
to it than that. But
I pay electric bills. Can you help me? I pay electric bills. I think that's everybody, right?
Yeah.
I pay electric bills. Okay, so how do people get hold of you? You work with do you do consulting nationally? You work with other people to educate them on what you do, and then you also do projects in South Dakota, North Dakota, Iowa, Wisconsin, and Minnesota. Is that accurate?
Correct. Yep. And we're focusing on ground mount installations of size. Up to that 1 megawatt, about 4,500, 5,000 panels or so. My hands are full right now with business and constructing projects, so I'm not doing any consulting nationally. We would love to share what we've done here in Minnesota with other states, to assist them in any way possible, to get some movement and create a more rich environment for renewables. But, as a construction company, we focus on constructing things. So that's our main focus.
And so how can people get hold of you?
Yeah, to our website, truenorthsolar.com. That's TRUNORTHSOLAR. There's no E in true. And that's named after a book by an old Medtronic CEO, Bill George. He wrote a book called True North, and it's all about following your own personal compass, weaving your way through life and what it throws at you, to keep you on track and make your own personal difference that you're trying to. So
that's
it's meaning
that's
behind
great. That's a good thing. So, okay. So they can get to you through your website. And I also have this little thing that, if you hear about, True North Solar through our radio show, they can get a free $50, restaurant card. So, it doesn't hurt to get a quote, does it?
Doesn't hurt at all.
So, okay, well,
free dinner.
Well, you have a wonderful holiday, and I thank you so much for coming onto the show.
Thank you very much, Sarah. And we touched on several things today. But if folks have more questions and want to get deeper into conversations about any of these topics, I'm happy to help out in any way.
Okay, sounds great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir.
You know, finding a cost-effective way to have renewable energy that's clean, that just integrates into our environment, and we can put it in a place, we don't have all the manufacturing costs, that really is our future. And I don't know if solar is going to be the long-term answer for us, but it definitely is a huge step forward from fossil fuels. So it's really great to think about these problems and figure out what we are going to do going forward as a community. But if you want to get more information about solar and to possibly save money, please give True North Solar a call. Remember to tell them that you heard about them through this radio show, and you will receive a $50 restaurant gift card. That's it for now, and have a wonderful day.